There was definitely something that happened to these people that was earth-shattering and completely has shaken up their lives.
If you want access to the best real ghost stories,
I think she was afraid that they were going to make her little friend go away.
Real accounts of the dead coming back to life.
She had a spirit that she had gotten very close with.
Real video and images of ghosts.
A little boy.
Then you need to be an extra podcast person, also known as an EPP. Sign up to be one for only $5 a month at ghostpodcast.com.
I stared transfixed as the mist began to gradually become more solid and translucent, and to my shock, more human in appearance.
Your support is what keeps our show on the air. For only $5, you'll have access to hundreds of EPP exclusive episodes, updated weekly, exclusive video content, and more.
Behind me in my kitchen, I hear a little girl say, "Are you my daddy? Where's my daddy?"
Keep us on the air and get access to the best ghost stories and more now at ghostpodcast.com. And thanks for your support.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is, and on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, after a tour of historic and haunted mansions, something seems to have followed a listener home. The ghost of a little girl haunts the residence of the island where she died, the grave of a Civil War soldier, plays a role in the haunting of a young girl, and a listener receives visions of a fire that's yet to happen from a mysterious ghost girl. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
The accidental theme is ghost girls.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't call the episode that, though.
No.
Ghost, that would've...
I think we've already done ghost girl at least once.
I think we've had, like, variations on it. Mm-hmm. Ghost girl, ghost girls. And then I think we would have one with a Z, Ghost Girls.
Okay.
No, I don't think we'd have that. But remember, like, when that was kind of like a thing in the 90s, where, like, it'd be kind of like, oh, it's hip, I'm putting a Z where an S should be.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it sound really wazacky.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how. Why did that go away? That was such a...
I don't know. Maybe people such a, thought it'd be better to spell things correctly.
It was such a good thing. It seemed to really make a lot of sense. So looking forward to these stories. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, you can also write it on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. And of course, if you like this thing that we're doing here at Real Ghost Stories Online and want more of it and want 140-some bonus episodes of the show that you can sit there and binge away on, our best ghost stories that we get that go to the EPP bonus episodes, you can sign up to get those only $5 a month at ghostpodcast.com. And that's what supports the show. It's what really keeps us on the air. So if you like this thing, go check that out at ghostpodcast.com. Let's move right into our first story here today. And it comes into us from Mandy. It says, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. It's Mandy from Denver, Colorado. I've been listening to Real Ghost Stories Online for almost a year now. I think listening to your show and a few other Real Ghost Story podcasts, as well as watching a crap ton of ghost hunting shows on TV, has opened me up to some unusual experiences. I've always wanted to have a paranormal experience, especially to see Bigfoot, but I've remained a cynical believer. Lately, however, some weird things have been happening. My niece, who is 16... and has always seen ghosts and had strange things happen to her, was staying with me for a few days. I took her on a ghost tour of some famously haunted Denver mansions on Capitol Hill, and we began at the historic Molly Brown House. We were all taking pictures, and I caught a strange white wisp, not entirely convinced it wasn't a bug, which was a fun way to start the night. We ended our tour at the most haunted location, the Peabody Mansion. Look that one up if you don't know about it. It's a doozy. I felt my arm burning as we were standing on the front porch of this mansion, so I looked down and saw scratch marks appearing. A couple of other guests on our tour started freaking out as we were leaving, crying and saying they felt dizzy, sick, etc., which apparently is pretty common at the Peabody. By the time we got home, the scratches on my arm were gone. The next day, my niece and I were playing Uno in the kitchen table. We live in a super small apartment, thanks to the ridiculous cost of living in Denver. So if you're sitting at the small cafe table where we eat, you literally have to scoot your chair in to open the front door because the door swings in. You also must come down some uncarpeted stairs to get to the entrance, and you can hear when someone is walking down the stairs if you're at the table. Anyway, we hear some very distinct knocks on the front door, which was right next to where my niece was sitting. She asked me if my husband Chris was home, even though we didn't hear anyone come down the stairs and knocking on the door so he wouldn't run into her when he opened it. I said, no, open the door and check. So she moved the chair, opened the door, and no one was there. Shortly after that, I was on a cleaning spree and decided to clean the window well. We live in a basement apartment, so this window is the largest one and in the same room as our bedroom. I scooped up all the dead leaves, cleared away the spider webs, and cleaned the glass. I left the window open that night and woke up to some crazy noises coming from the window well. It almost sounded like something was in there eating something else. Loud crunching noises, very unsettling, especially since I knew it wasn't an animal that had fallen in and was shuffling around since I had just cleared away all the dead leaves. I was terrified, and it took me a while to get up and shut the window. I didn't even want to look out because I was afraid of what I was going to see. I glanced up through the partially open blinds and saw a black shadow towards the top corner of the window quickly move away as I approached, but the noises were continuing. When I looked into the window well, nothing was there. I closed the window and the blinds and ran back to bed. Of course, my husband slept through the whole thing. I went out of town shortly afterwards, and on the trip that I will soon be describing, and asked my husband to make sure he kept the window closed unless he wanted some creepy weird thing to come in and get him. All this culminated during a week trip to my dad's cabin with some of my girlfriends. His cabin is very far out there and is in bear, badger, and mountain lion territory, so I'm always a little on edge when it gets dark. We were sitting in the gazebo eating dinner. It was already dark by this time, and one of my friends said she saw something white flash by. It freaked us out a bit, but it really freaked us out when my dog ran over to the exact spot, put her front paws up on the gazebo ledge, I was just staring at something we couldn't see. The next night, I was having a hard time sleeping. I was feeling uneasy and freaked out all night. I finally fell asleep and had this very vivid dream that my dog was scrambling up into the highest branches of a tree. She was terrified and trying to claw her way to the top. Not sure exactly how, but in my dream, she communicated to me that she was trying to get away from a ghost. I woke up in a panic and felt that something was hovering over me. It's hard to explain the feeling, but something was fluttering or underlying somehow back and forth over my face. Right at the moment, it felt like a bucket of ice water was streaming through my veins from head to toe. Then I heard some noises on the stairs that lead down to the bedroom I was staying in, and I thought it was my dog until I heard her collar shake right next to me. I started looking around the room, even though I didn't want to, and saw a strange milky or silvery-looking shadow moving along the ceiling, which is when I flipped on the light. So freaked out, I stayed up until the sun came out. Meanwhile, back in my apartment on the same night, my husband was seeing strange shadows on our bedroom ceiling. When I came home, I noticed that the fan sitting on the window ledge in our bedroom had been knocked off and was on the floor, and he didn't know how it got there. That's it for now. Thanks for your show and for creating a platform where people can share their stories.
I'm guessing that all this started with that tour.
And yeah.
Maybe that's why it was mentioned, and so it's kind of like, okay, maybe something followed her, or maybe she's just realized that her light now shines a little brighter. I don't know.
It seems that the fact that a lot of these paranormal things all kind of picked up shortly thereafter,
mm-hmm.
you know, it almost kind of leads more to like something following you. You know, you always say like, don't take something from a haunted house or haunted location or things of that nature. Here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What about toilet paper?
What about toilet paper?
Can you take toilet paper from a haunted location? I mean, like, not like grab a roll and steal it. I mean, more like, you know, you're in the restroom at a haunted restaurant or whatever. And, you know, like, because with allergies, I'll usually like take a couple extra pieces and put them in my pocket for like a Kleenex
mm-hmm.
for later.
Mm-hmm.
I guess technically that's taking something from the haunted location.
I think it needs to be something that's like, an item that's like a fixture or like a permanent thing.
That's been part of the place for a long time.
Or decor, not something that you use up on a regular basis. Okay. Like if you eat at a haunted restaurant, I don't think you're going to become haunted because you ingested food from there.
Because you ingested haunted chicken fingers or something?
Right, and your butt's not going to be haunted because you wiped with haunted toilet paper.
Oh, but some of the places, your butt could very easily be haunted, especially like the fried chicken and stuff from some of the places, you know.
That does follow you home.
That does tend to be kind of a common thread in a lot of older, like, haunted, like, hotels. Like, you know, like the smaller, like, the roadhouse type places where it's like, all right, we're haunted. We got a lot of fried chicken, too.
Right.
And it's delicious. But that does come back to haunt you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even scarier ways.
But do you see what I mean about the difference? It's like things that you don't use up.
You probably have about the same odds of the haunted chicken fingers haunting you as just the fact that it's a dead animal you're eating, that the animal could come and haunt you as something that's attached to the building.
Right.
What if it's a, what about this one? Ready? Are you ready for this?
What, a pet horse and you decide to try horse meat?
No.
Okay, what?
I'm not going down that road. That's horrible.
Right.
I would never say something of that nature. I can't believe you would suggest that.
Okay.
Now, what about this, though? This is almost kind of in the line of fixture-ish type thing. Okay, really old hotel or building, whatever. Haunted building of some sort. Wine cellar. Wine that's been in the building. Aging for like 30, 40, 50 years. Probably, you know, longer than like the 30, 40. But let's say you get one of their insane. I mean, I can't imagine that would be remotely cheap. But let's just in theory say you do that.
Okay.
You get the 60-year-old bottle of wine. I don't know if that's even a thing. But let's say you do. That's been there for a long time. It's seen a lot of things. It's, you know, been there for a while. Could that food item, or ingestible, I should say, could that be haunted?
I doubt it.
Okay. Haunted bottle of wine.
I doubt it, unless it's like a really sentimental, this was given to me by somebody special and I've hung on to it forever and there's like a real attachment there.
Well, I wonder if it would be, because I could see that scenario, but would the wine itself be haunted or more so the bottle?
I don't know.
Somebody's going to look this up, and there's going to be a story of a haunted bottle of wine that's going to come into us now.
Okay.
And we'll learn.
That'd be good.
We'll learn about haunted ingestibles on the next Maury. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Penny writes in, this is a relatively short story, but one to share. I grew up in a house that my great-grandparents built. My maternal grandmother and her husband lived in this house, and I grew up there with both my parents and grandparents. I was fortunate to live in a big Southern colonial-style type house from the turn of the 20th century. When I was in college, both grandparents passed away within 18 months of each other. My grandfather died of a heart attack in the house, and my grandmother passed away in the hospital. It may interest you that both of my great-grandparents had also passed away in this house. While growing up there, I never felt anything but safe and happy. If anything strange happened, it certainly didn't make me feel uncomfortable enough to register. I know my mother once told me, if anyone is here, then you are related to him and then they love you. I guess I took that to heart. A few more years passed and I was planning my wedding. One afternoon, my mother, aunt, and I were in a big old parlor in the front of the house while I was trying on clothes that we had recently bought for different wedding events. We were happy and enjoying the shopping spree. In that room, there was a big fireplace. On each side of the fireplace were electric wall sconces. To my recollection, these things never worked. I don't think I even ever tried to turn them on, and I don't ever think about them being functional. Well, while we were trying on clothes, they came on. I don't know how long they were on before we noticed because it was still light outside. I remember my mother pointing out the lights and saying, "Your grandmother is telling us she's happy that we're having a good time. She loves shopping and would love to be here." Again, I didn't feel strange at all after all these years. I don't remember ever investigating how this was happening or even looking closely at those lights. I know for a fact that I haven't ever seen them on again.
I don't know that it's the grandmother saying, "Hey, I'm still here," or the grandfather or somebody else in the family. You know, it's hard to know when you've had relatives pass away in the house, more than one of them.
Mm-hmm. Who's hanging out?
Who's hanging out?
For the fashion show?
Right.
What? Maybe it's not like, hey, I'm glad you're happy. Maybe it's like, hey, that's a horrible choice. That's a bad dress. That's a bad outfit. Why are you doing that?
I don't know.
That could be.
Could be.
It could be also, I love it too.
Could be.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Nothing.
This Kleenex I have here in my hand?
It's haunted.
It's from a haunted place.
Right.
I don't blow my nose often, but when I do, I use haunted tissues.
You blow your nose all the time and everybody hears it.
I know. It's kind of like an amusement park train.
It's so loud. It is.
Sometimes they think it's the Silver Dollar City one down the road.
I thought a goose got hit.
It does kind of sound like, because there are a lot of like wildlife, birds in the area. And I imagine it could probably reminiscently sound like one of those getting hit by something, mm-hmm. me blowing my nose. So there you go. Let's go to another letter. Michael says, hey, my name's Michael. I live in Northeast Harbor, Maine, and I have a couple of stories to share with you. My friends and I always hung out on our island, where it is home to some very old, ancient summer homes. One day, five of us were walking on one of the paths, and we came to an open field, which was the emergency landing field. Every private island has one for the paramedics to come and land for emergencies. I looked out and I saw a young girl skipping about in the field, and I found this odd because every family that was renting had no kids. I remember this girl clear as day, long black hair and a white dress with pink and purple flowers all over it. I asked my mates if they had seen her before, and none of them had. Now, while I'm sitting here, I feel emptiness inside, and I started to cry for some odd reason. I went up to the girl and asked if she was lost, and she said, no, I'm just playing. She then told me her name was Abby. I then told her to be careful and thought everything was normal. Now things get a bit creepy. I went back to the trail and then went home asking if any of them had kids I didn't know about. All of them said no, but one of them, an old lady that had been renting a home for many generations, asked me, what did she look like? I described the long black hair and the white dress with the flowers all over it. The old lady's face went pale white in an instant. I told her the girl's name was Abby. She tells me, Michael, Abby's died like 30-some-odd years ago. She came out to the island one midwinter day, walked on one of the paths that wasn't even a foot wide along the rocky cliffs, which had at least a 100-foot drop to the ocean. Her body was never found. Every year on her death day, for at least 7 years after she died, something washed up on shore that belonged to the girl. My heart dropped. I mentioned, this can't be because I just saw her. The old lady said she had to go. The second story goes like this. There's a cemetery on the island. Kids like to paint rocks and put them on the loved one's grave. One day, one of the families painted some rocks, but were heading out of town for the day. They came to me and asked if I'd put the rocks on these graves. She made a map on where to put the rocks, and I said, I can do that. I did it in the afternoon. Next morning, I get a call saying, where did you put the rocks in, or why did you put the rocks in a cross form in some of the girls' graves? I responded saying, I never did. I went to check it out, and there it was, the girl who I saw a while back. I hope you guys love my two stories, and I want to say thank you for reading my stories. Love your podcast, and I listen to them every day. Keep up the great stories. Thank you, Michael.
It sounds like the little ghost girl liked Michael.
Mm-hmm.
As far as just, I'm going to, you know, show up and I'm going to do this rock cross thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was just messing with them because she probably wanted to hang out with them.
You know, it's an interesting thing. When you're dead for that long and seems to realize that she's dead by doing the cross thing on the grave. At what point is it you're not really screwing with anybody? You're just living in your own reality now. And these are just the things you do. And they come across to the living as, you know, they're screwing with me because they're showing me these signs that they're around. But this is just stuff, you know, they're doing. And there's a lot of other things that go completely unnoticed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I just assume that death can be very lonely if you come back as a ghost and that you're going to do whatever you can to try and get the attention of somebody who
sure.
you think might actually pay attention to you.
Sure. And if for some reason he saw her and maybe others don't necessarily, it's trying to get that attention. That makes sense too. Thanks for sharing that that story with us. 855-853-4802, the number at Real Ghost Stories Online, to share your experiences with us. Lots of good stuff up on our EPP website now, if you haven't checked it out. We got some of the episodes of Dream Meanings up there to listen to. Those are going there first before they go public. So EPPs get a chance to listen to those episodes before anybody else. Episode 1 and 2 now posted. Also, of course, all the EPP bonus episodes, 140 some of those up there. Video content, Seeing Ghosts, new episode of that is up. So if you haven't been there lately and you're an EPP, go check it out. If you're not an EPP yet, go see what it's all about and why it's so worth it. Only $5 a month is all we ask, and get access to all of that material. That's our way of saying thanks for helping to keep us on the air, and your $5 is what keeps us on the air. So please do check that out. Katrina writes in, "Hi, Jenny and Tony. My name is Katrina. I had to pause an episode so I can write this in. I'm listening to an episode named Tragedy and heard the story about the haunting caused by a body being buried on the property. I have a similar story to this. My dad used to live in southern Indiana. The house my family rented was a compact four-bedroom house. I only visited them a few times while they lived there, but had very interesting experiences. At the time, I was in my mid-teen years, and everything paranormal was extremely scary to me. So the first time I visited, my dad nonchalantly informed me that there was a Civil War soldier buried in the backyard by a tree. Sure enough, there's a headstone in the backyard. Through my time there, I always had a heavy feeling in the back two bedrooms, the left being my little brothers and the right being my little sisters. Most of the heaviness came from my brother's room, which was closest to the grave. I always felt like someone was watching me while I was in there. I never wanted to be in the room longer than I had to. One thing my dad told me was the girls would complain about someone being in the closet every few weeks, and he would go in there and call out the soldier's name and tell him to leave, and the girls would stop complaining. After hearing this, I opted to sleep in the living room the rest of my stay. One day, my cousin came over while all the kids were napping and my stepmom was folding laundry. We decided to cook lunch. I have a note. The pantry is a small closet in a hall outside of the kitchen. He went to grab the ingredients in the pantry and closed the closet door behind us. After a few minutes, we needed to grab something else from the pantry. We walked around the corner and immediately took a step back after seeing the pantry door wide open. We specifically remembered closing that door, and after contemplating the rational options and testing if the door can swing open by itself, we found no rational conclusion. My experiences there were not exactly negative, but there was definitely activity going on in the house. Sorry if I rambled a bit. I have quite a few different stories I can tell you in the future if you're interested. Keep up the good work. I listen to the show every day at work and plan to become an EPP very soon."
It makes me wonder if it really is the ghost of the soldier, or I'm guessing that either that house is very old or there was a very old home there before.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be something to do with the people that lived there before and not necessarily just this ghost soldier. Because if he's coming in the house, you know, and in those two rooms, I think maybe it's more so to do with a home that used to be there. And that's just the only part that overlaps where the house used to be.
Like the footprint?
Yeah.
What about this? I mean, it says the ghost of the Civil War soldier, was he buried there because he died in the war and this is the closest place? Or was he a Civil War soldier, came home from the war, lived his life, died? That's my question, because if he died in battle in a relatively close proximity to the home, mm-hmm. I'm almost wondering if there's something going on with the property itself. Almost in the vein of what you said, but more so like in terms of the war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did something happen very close by or on those very grounds? And that's why he's buried there. And some of that is, you know, interfering with the footprint of the house.
Something I've always wondered, and I could easily look this up, I just never have, is if, you know, a soldier in the Civil War died in battle. Usually there was multiple people that died.
Mm-hmm.
Did they do like a mass burial, or what did they do?
I do not know the answer to that question. I mean, there's a lot of things you could speculate, you know, a lot of, you know, the war's going and they're moving, and do they just bury them,
mm-hmm.
you know, in at the closest camp where it's safe to dig some holes and bury? Is it float them down river? You know, is it, you know, there's all sorts of, you know,
I don't know.
I mean, and then there could be the, you know, the battles where nobody really survived from the one side. Then the other side, did the other side do anything with the bodies then? Mm-hmm. Or did they just leave them onto the field and then let, you know, whoever comes by or nature take it?
If somebody knows the answer to that, email me, because I want to know what that practice was.
I wonder if it's somewhat circumstantial to all of those scenarios, you know, depending on what was going on and what was the practical thing to do at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'd imagine practicality probably played a lot of role in it.
Because I could see, like, if in this case, if it was like an injured soldier and they were trying to nurse him back to health and he didn't make it, and it was like a family that kind of took him in, tried to heal him, and then he died, him getting a burial.
Yeah. Sure.
That's going to help us figure out some of the ghostly stuff, I think, more than than not.
It's an interesting piece of history to know the history of, to know the accuracy of that.
But speaking of burying things...
You found a body in the garden?
No, but I know Mississippi University did.
Oh, God, yeah. I posted that link up the other day. Let me pull that one up. This is... by the time you're hearing this on the air, this came out about a week and a half ago, or about a week ago, really. This is just totally creepy and messed up. And, you know, I wonder if we have gotten stories from here and I'm not remembering them or whatnot, but, it's reported, over 7,000 bodies may be buried beneath Mississippi University. The story that I'm reading from is coming from a website called Gizmodo, but it's been picked up on a gazillion other sites, too. Essentially, as many as 7,000 bodies buried across 20 acres at the Mississippi Medical Center campus, former site of the state's first mental institution, as they would have called it back in those days. Officials at the university now face the grim task of putting 100-year-old bodies out of the ground for scientific analysis. From 1855 to 1935, some 35,000 patients were admitted to the asylum, as it was called then. Many of those who died during the stay were buried at the facility's cemetery. It was relocated over 80 years ago to the grounds that hold the deceased now, and they belong to the University of Mississippi Medical Center. In 2013, the construction workers uncovered 66 coffins on campus. That just was the beginning of the iceberg. Construction began on a parking garage in 2014. Ground-penetrating radar revealed the presence of 1,000 coffins then. And subsequent surveys revealed a total of 2,000 coffins, but current estimates now place the total number of coffins buried beneath the campus at approximately 7,000.
That's just insane. And I wonder if it'll go up from that. I mean, honestly, it's 80 years worth of...
Gosh.
Patients that died.
That's a lot of patients.
Well, and that would have seen prime time for tuberculosis outbreaks.
Yeah.
And all kinds of stuff, because that was rampant in a lot of institutions.
Yeah. Officials at the university estimate it'll cost about $3,000 to exhume and rebury each body. Total cost of $21 million. University is now considering an alternative plan in which it'll do the work in-house at a cost of $400,000 per year over the course of 8 years. So there you go.
That's one hell of a GoFundMe.
Do you start a GoFundMe for that, or is that like? And guess what? It's like you know how some colleges have classes that are mandated, where it's not, you know, the non-elective courses. It's like this is just like a new non-elective course you have to take. It just like. What would be a non-elective, you know, something where, you know, like,
art appreciation.
Yeah. Something of that nature, corpse appreciation. And it's required and you have to be part of this, whether you're a medical student or not. You can be going in for business administration, but we're sorry. You at least have to have one semester of exhuming bodies and relocating them.
I just want to know what that job description looks like for the people that they're going to hire. Do you say what it's going to be, or do you just say a lot of yard work?
You know, a great thing that they could do for that is go to ZipRecruiter.com and use our promo code GHOST.
Yeah.
And find some folks to for that job. Post it to more than 100 job boards. They're not even sponsoring this episode. I'm just throwing it out there.
It's just funny to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could hire the best candidates for it that way.
Yeah.
ZipRecruiter.com /ghost. And there you go. Find the folks to exhume those 7,000 bodies. My God. What category does that even go into? You know, when you, because you post, you know, I would assume to categories of some sort. So people who are searching, they're looking up jobs they may be interested in.
Archaeological landscaping.
Archaeological. Hey, Mom, I got a degree in archaeological landscaping.
Yeah.
That's great, honey. I'm glad we spent our life savings on you getting that. So what are you going to do now? I'm going to go be a sandwich artist. That's pretty much how that goes. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Ashley says, I grew up in a family that believed in ghosts. No one would say if you're lying, if you saw something. They might even help you figure out what's going on. Anyway, I sometimes see people that aren't there but don't realize they're dead until they disappear because they aren't see-through or floating or any of that Hollywood nonsense. I was at university one day up in the computer lab finishing a paper. This is way back in the early 2000s before I had a personal laptop. Oh, the horror. This was a girl on a computer beside me, or there was a girl on the computer beside me. She was wearing jeans, colorful striped shirt, and a vest, and she had long brown hair. I never looked directly at her for the half hour or so that I was there, but I could see her out of the corner of my eye. I can still see her perfectly in my mind. I turned to ask if she had the time, not thinking that I could have looked at the computer clock, duh. And she was gone. No big deal, right? She just left because she was done in the computer lab. Not quite that simple. The swivel chairs in the lab made the horrible ear-piercing screech every time you turn to get up or down. I never heard it, and it's not a sound that could be ignored. We're talking nails on a chalkboard in stereo here. I never saw her get up, even though I could see her out of the corner of my eye. When I checked the computer she had been at, it was completely logged out, which on those old computers nearly took a minute to process. Her chair and mouse were cold as if no one had been sitting there for ages. I touched them to feel residual warmth. Weird, yes, but I was curious. I never saw her walk out of the room. And from where I was sitting, I could see the only door. I don't know of any student deaths on campus, but I suppose it's not the only reason she might be hanging around. She could have died away from campus and wanted to hang around, though. I doubt this was an intelligent haunting. My money is on this being a rarely seen residual haunting. I know that if I were a spirit with consciousness, I wouldn't be finishing a late-term paper.
I completely agree. I think that's a really good observation
mm-hmm.
as to how to tell an intelligent haunting versus a residual is, does this make sense?
Sure.
I don't know of any student that's like, well, even when I'm dead, I'm going to still do papers.
I'd still be checking email, I think.
I could see that, but that's totally different than writing a term paper.
Sure, sure. Here's a good question. You know, we talk about when folks die, and then sometimes when they come back, they're still having to operate on the plane and essentially the geography and the outline of how things were in their life.
Mm-hmm.
For example, where some people see like entities walking on floor and levels of buildings that the floor is not there anymore. It's been kind of gutted and completely, you know, redone. So why is there somebody standing up where there used to be a balcony?
Mm-hmm.
Would that same thing be true of like the technology of the day? If someone had passed away in like 1996 and they wanted to be a ghost that goes to the computer, are they completely fucked and still have to try and log into AOL? Are they still, you've got mail? You know, is that, and they're doing the whole dial-up for eternity, even though technology has gone far beyond that? Do they at least get DSL or maybe a 56K modem, or are they stuck with the 28.8 or the 14.4 if they passed at that time?
I don't know.
Or do they still have to use the damn AOL keywords to find anything?
You know, we've always talked about ghosts trying to use technology that they're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because they have to, like you're saying.
Yeah. Do they still use beepers?
God.
I mean, I wonder if somebody's still trying to communicate via beeper and like, well, wait a second.
Just the douchebag ghosts are the ones that carry beepers. Seriously.
Well, I mean, it was when people had beepers, there was like two groups of folks who had them. The people who absolutely needed them, like doctors.
Doctors or douchebags.
And it's like the D or the D, the doctor or a douchebag.
Yeah,
one of the two had a
pretty
beeper.
Pretty much.
You know, it was so far like it was before our time when beepers were You know, I remember people having them, but most, for the most part, nobody our age did. I remember one kid did, but he was like kind of the spoiled I have everything kid. Yeah. And like, he's got a beeper, you know, it's like, wow, why do you need a beeper?
That's so your mom can.
And later he got into drugs. And I think that maybe he was already slinging them back then. I don't know. But he had a beeper in, I don't know, sixth grade. Yeah. About sixth grade. He had the beeper.
I rest my case.
There you go. Yeah. Does anybody still, are beepers still around? Can you still buy beepers?
I don't know. I would imagine if you have to have a beeper in this day and age, mm-hmm. there is a really good reason you can't have a cell phone.
Yeah,
I wonder. And therefore you were excluded from my generalized categorization of what kind of people carry beepers.
You're excused from Jenny's judgment.
Yeah.
There we go. That's a whole other show in itself. Jenny judges people. It's just, we just bring up a topic and then Jenny just makes generalizations. That would alienate about everyone.
Well, I have no friends.
Ron writes in, hi, love your show. Just happened to cross it a couple of months ago and have been listening ever since. Let me begin by saying I'm not a staunch believer, nor am I a cynical skeptic. I believe about 90% of reported paranormal experiences are either misinterpreted natural occurrences, runaway imagination, or deliberate hoaxes. The remaining 10%, however, having said that, I have had several experiences of various types that cannot be explained away. One of the more unusual experiences happened when I went to visit a girlfriend I was dating out in the Midwest. And she had warned me there was something odd in her house at the time. It's not that I don't believe her, but I tend to approach these things with a more pragmatic demeanor. My first night there, she had picked me up from an airport, took me directly to her house. She had worked nights, so when we got back to her house, I loaded my luggage and she went to work. I took a shower, got the bed sheets out of the dryer, made the bed, and went to sleep. Next morning, she came back from work, walked into the bedroom as I was starting to wake up. She was kind of teasing me, saying, oh, you miss me so much, you had to sleep with my jewelry. In the bed was all her jewelry lined up alongside of me. My first thought was that perhaps I was sleepwalking. For the first time ever, I retrieved her jewelry, but at that time, she was renovating her bedroom, so all her personal items were in various places around the house. Even she wasn't certain where all her jewelry was to begin with. There were other experiences. Her daughter thought she saw me walk into the bathroom, but I was asleep in the bedroom at the time. Another time, I had washed my coffee mug and set it to dry the night before so I could take it to work the next day. That morning, I couldn't find it, so I just headed out the door, and the coffee mug was placed in the middle of the porch right outside the front door. That one fascinated me. Something took my coffee mug outside while it was snowing, without setting off any of the alarms on any of the doors or windows. How? A big part of me would like to sit down with a spirit and ask questions. Another part of me knows that would just open the door to who knows what. It wasn't until much later, when talking to a neighbor whose family lived in the neighborhood for several generations, that she found out people who lived in her house tended to commit suicide, to that she knew of, one that he heard about. Whether it be ghosts or something else, I feel there are just some things that are not for us to know in this life. Thank you for taking the time to read this, and thank you for providing a forum for people to share their experiences without the stigma attached to people who have had experiences. Best regards, Ron.
Do you think there's something with properties when, like they said, people there tend to commit suicide?
Yeah, I mean, it. I think you kind of got to take it case by case. I think there's some things where it feeds on depression and people that have, you know, situations and things like that going on with them, and can certainly, you know, amp up the volume, mm-hmm. if you will, and drive people to that. You know, in other cases, I think sometimes you may just have no haunting whatsoever and somebody is suffering, you know, to the point of where they go to that extreme. And then that sadness still lingers.
Yeah.
And then that can, you know, essentially infest the area, mm-hmm. and affect other people who may be sensitive to it. So sometimes it's like, is it the horse before the cart or whatever? It's that whole feel. But I think it's very situational to, you know, the area. And I think there's just plain evil and darkness, and that will, you know, envelop anyone, no matter what may be going on with the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
if you will, on that one. 855-853-4802 is our number. Todd writes in, hello, my name is Todd. I'm from Huntington, West Virginia. I've been having paranormal experiences for most of my life. I want to tell you today about one of my most profound experiences I have had. It also seems to have been something of a trigger event because afterwards, the rate at which I have had paranormal experiences really seemed to ramp up. So, I was 15 years old and living with my dad for the summer at his house in Barbersville. There we go. I can read. Which sits just up the road from Huntington. I'd stayed up late watching movies and finally I went to bed around 2 a.m. But an hour after I'd fallen asleep, I was violently awoken with something sitting on my chest and strangling my throat. I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. And the fear that set into me was like nothing I've ever felt before or after. The entity was female and ink black, as if it were made of a shadow. Yet I could feel its weight pressure upon me, and I could make out facial features. It was definitely in the form of a young woman who was scowling and screaming at me. I could not understand the words it was saying, but I could tell it was angry. I truly thought I was going to die. I still couldn't breathe, and as this went on, the entity grew angrier and more violent. It began thrashing my head about and screaming louder. Its eyes suddenly turned a fierce, glowing green. I'll never forget those eyes. I was starting to give up hope as I could not make out a sound. I couldn't yell for help or move an inch or get away. I'm not a religious person, nor is my family. I was not raised going to church at all, but the only thing I could think of was to pray. And so I did. I prayed in my head as I could not talk, and I asked for help. This didn't seem to be working either. In fact, it seemed to bring the entity to new levels of violence. But as I had no other option, I kept on praying in my head. And finally, after what seemed like an eternity, it simply vanished. I laid in bed for a good while, just trying to come to grips with what had happened. I didn't attempt to sleep the rest of that night. I was jittery with fear. The next day, I told my father and the neighbors what had happened. Nobody believed me. They all said I simply had a bad dream. Several years later, I discovered an article online about sleep paralysis, and it described my event almost completely. Yet to me, this could not have happened. This could not have been. It was as real as being attacked by another human being. I still find it confusing. So it gets me jittery and goosebumps just thinking about it, and it has been 17 years since this happened. And as I stated earlier, this seems to have been a trigger event. I began to have more paranormal experiences after this, yet never anything like this happening again, thankfully. So I'm curious, what do you guys think about sleep paralysis? I'm a huge fan of the show. I listen to it on Podbean. Keep up the great work, and I'll send in more of my experiences later. Thank you.
I think it's case by case.
Yeah.
I think sometimes paranormal, sometimes not.
There's a lot of confusion with sleep paralysis as to what it is and if it's something paranormal or not. It's, you know, it is very much described as exactly how they said it. You can't breathe. At least you think you can't breathe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's truly the case if you were hooked up to medical equipment and you are able to recount having a sleep paralysis experience, if the machine would say, yeah, they were having trouble breathing. Or if that's just the perception that you're having, you know, mm-hmm. in the dream, you know, like if you dream you're drowning, it feels, and you feel that, you know, that your body's going to, you know, register that you're actually drowning. Mm-hmm. That'd be a good question though. So it is very difficult, but it can be a very real experience, you know, when you have it. My sleep paralysis experience was also about 16 years ago, so close to the time period on this one. And I question that a little bit. I mean, I think what I question about it is the fact that I sat up.
Yeah.
And normally with sleep paralysis, it's you wake up and you can't move. I specifically sat up and then I couldn't move. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I suppose... This is just me speaking as a layman, not knowing, you know, anything about this other than what we've heard and we talk about. I suppose just like anything, you know, you can kind of wake up and then fall right back asleep. And I suppose you could be jolted awake enough and then kind of fall back into that state, in theory. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's the one weird thing about it to me that makes me go, maybe that was more than just a sleep paralysis event that I had. I didn't open my eyes for it either, but I do recall sitting up because I remember the position I was in specifically. And then when it was done, slouching back down into bed and covering myself up with my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle sheets. And
really?
No, I'm kidding. never had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles shades.
I didn't think you did.
I mean, come on. I was about 18 at the time. I had Ghostbusters.
There's probably 18-year-olds that...
I had Ghostbusters.
Okay.
I mean,
you had moved on. Okay.
Moved on. I mean, just some. I was never into turtles, even when it was age appropriate. I was always fighting the battle in the 80s between which is the toy you want to play with, because it was kind of the battle with me and my cousins. Are we going to play with turtles or the Ghostbusters? I was always very pro Ghostbusters, to the point of I just refused to play with the turtles. It's like, y'all gonna, number one, I never had anybody to play with, so when I did, it was like, okay, here's what you can do. But if they're going to play Turtles, I just go do something by myself.
It was more so not that, oh, I get to play with kids. I'm going to play whatever they want. It's like, no, they have the opportunity to play with me.
Yes.
And if they don't want to play what I want to play, they can play whatever they want by themselves.
I don't know any children that are like that at all.
No.
I don't know any offspring of mine that have the exact same outlook on life or how to handle other children. She's just like me when it comes.
She is. It's
like,
scary.
It's like, oh, yeah, no, well, I'm just going to do this, then that's fine. And she's completely content with it.
Yeah.
I was too. I didn't even care. But then all the adults would be like, why didn't you want to go play? You never have people to play with. Because I don't want to.
Yeah.
I did.
I know.
I'm that way still. If I'm not interested in something, it's not like, you know, I'm not trying to offend anyone. It's just like, well, but I also feel the same way about other people. To things that I'm interested in, I don't want to drag somebody into being interested or pretend to be interested in something that I want to do. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. Fine.
Okay.
You get it?
I do get it, but...
Maybe that's not how most people operate.
No, I don't think so.
How my mind works, though.
I think it's more about togetherness than what you're doing.
Well, yes, in certain situations. But I'm just saying, if it's like... you know, somebody's working on a project of some sort that, or they're playing a game or something. You know, if it's, you don't want to play it and you don't like it, okay, whatever.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's how I am, so it's normal to me. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where I have to take a look at it from the other person's perspective, which I'm not always the greatest at.
Yeah.
You know, and I haven't been, you know, maybe it's an only child thing. Maybe that's
might be
where that comes from. Lacey writes in, this story started about 6 months ago. Like I mentioned in previous stories, I consider myself as sensitive, and this one really took me through a loop and made me question if I could possibly be psychic. My boyfriend and I were doing laundry at a local laundromat at around 4 a.m. We're total night owls, so it's typical for us to be out and about in the early morning hours. At this point, I was still living with my mom. Anyway, we're sitting in my car waiting for the laundry to do when, unexpectedly, the light in front of the laundromat went out. This is not the first time we were there at that time, so we knew the light wasn't on a timer, and only the one light went out, not all of them. I'd have thought that the bulb must have just blew out if it weren't for the overwhelming feeling of someone staring at me from right under where the light would just blew. Suddenly, I got a vision of what the ghost looked like in my mind, like I always do. So she was a girl, mid-teens, black long hair. She was also wearing late 1800s, early 1900s nightgown. She had a very anxious, paranoid, and threatening look in her eyes. Not like she was going to hurt me, but more like she wanted to be seen and was super pissed that no one gave her the time of day. Instantly, I was sort of freaked out, but also so used to this happening that I just was kind of annoyed and wanted my wash to hurry up so I could go home. Our wash was done, so we went inside to get it, and the second I walked through the door of the laundromat, I got a vision in my eyes, kind of like what a daydream would look like, but this was no daydream because all I saw was flames, nothing but flames in the daydream-like state. I thought it was weird, but I knew the girl was the one who made me see the flames. All I could think of is she must have died in a fire and was trying to show me how she died. I was thinking her house caught fire and she didn't get out in time. No joke, not even 3 weeks later, the laundromat caught on fire and had to be shut down for a couple of months. I no longer think that this girl died in a fire. I now think she was telling me there was going to be a fire. There is a heads up. Also, my mom told me about a week after that laundry trip with my boyfriend that we were moving. Right away, I knew that we were moving to the house in the woods behind that laundromat where the girl was. I don't think I've ever been so not excited to move. And just like I thought, we were moving into that home. It was nice and quiet all the time, but definitely overtaken by the girl's spirit. I felt her constantly and told my mom about her repeatedly. My mom just blew it off like she always does, but one night my aunt and her teenage kids were over and we were having a fun game night kind of thing. Now, when you get my mom and aunt together, they talk about ghosts all the time, and my aunt's kids were saying how creepy my house was. My mom then decided to pull out the Ghost Tracker app and was walking around the house with it. My mom also thinks she's the biggest prankster ever, so she tried to trick my cousin into going into her dark room, thinking he would have his reflection in the mirror on the back of the bedroom door, and it would scare him. Oh, I forgot to mention that he's also a sensitive, maybe even more than I am. He walked into my mom's room, shut the door behind him, and not 3 seconds later, he screamed and ran out as fast as he could. He sat on the couch and was out of breath. I asked him what happened, and he blurted out, "There was a girl in there." I asked him what she looked like, and he said she had long black hair and was wearing a white nightgown. He described the exact girl that I felt all the time living there. It honestly was great to have someone else see what I was seeing for months beforehand and give him some proof to my mom that there is a girl haunting her house. About a week ago, I moved into a brand new apartment complex with my boyfriend and have never been happier. I haven't felt anything since we moved in, but I guess I'll give it some time before I write off that it's not haunted. Unfortunately, my mom lives there by herself now, and I'm praying that the girl looks over her and keeps her safe. I asked her before I moved out if she could, and hopefully she heard me. That's all for now, but don't worry, I'll keep you guys posted. Thanks again.
I don't know that you're psychic as much as you're able to receive messages from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's more so what's going on. Because I think if she were psychic, there would be many more instances not related to this little girl and the burning down laundromat.
Mm-hmm. So much more of like a sensitive than a psychic. Is that the right terminology?
Yes, but I think maybe a different level of sensitivity to the point where she can get actual messages.
Sure.
I think that's up a few notches from feeling energy.
She's out there like the 8 or the 9.
Yeah, I think so. And I think now that she's had this experience that, unfortunately for her, that there will probably be more experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's more you're psychic, you know the future. It's more so you're going to start getting messages.
Sure. Yeah, I would agree. Thank you for sharing that story with us. I was just thinking about other things. We're talking about when we were kids and what we would do and how I would be like, here's what I'm going to play. You want to play with me? I remember one time I had my friend Eric over, and this is 5th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this because I didn't really have many friends in 5th grade. 5th grade was a rough year for me. And then 6th was wonderful. I switched schools around that time, but it was the summer between 5th and 6th, actually. And I remember he was like my only friend at the time.
Uh-huh.
And he came over to play. And all I wanted to do was play radio station. And he did it. I mean, he was kind of a farm kid. And, you know, he was into, you know, cars and things normal boys of that age are into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was all about, well, hey, let's set up the sawhorses in the front yard and put a piece of plywood over the top of it. And then we're going to make a big banner out of a cardboard box that has a radio station logo on it and stick that in front of it and take the boom box out there. And we're going to do a live broadcast all fucking day.
That sounds just like so much fun.
This is what I did.
There's no wonder he didn't want to play that.
No kidding. Well, he played it, though. He played it with me. We had fun. He was a funny kid, and he went along with it. God bless him. But I just look back on that, you know, because I was so passionate about it. So it was like, to me, it didn't even register that some other kid
might not want to do this. Okay.
And we went out there and with the cassette tapes and played the hits and talked between the songs for a good 5 to 6 hours straight.
Poor kid. Did he ever come over again?
I don't think so. I think that was it.
I bet. Yeah.
We've connected on Facebook a couple years back.
Did he have any surprise at all that you turned into a grown-up radio dork?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And he turned into, he has a construction company now.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he does. So, and I don't think it's because of the sawhorses.
No.
But he was a really, I mean, God bless him, he was such a nice kid. I mean, and he wasn't the type that was like, what the hell? And no, we're not going to do that. He went along with it. patience.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was a good friend.
But that's me at that age. And it's still sitting in the basement now.
Still doing
house.
It. I'm still
now I just
radio.
Force my wife to play radio station with me.
Playing radio.
So I haven't really stopped this trend. I haven't really picked up on the fact that other people are not so comfortable with the idea. Wait till the kids get involved. Dear Tony and Jenny, wow, your show is amazing. I've been listening to your show now for a few months and have just signed up to become an EPP member. I'm loving it. Right to my story. I have quite a few stories of the paranormal through my life. Let's start from my first ever experience. I was around 3 to 4 years of age, and we moved into a house that was haunted. I was always frightened of the dark from being little, and was most scared of the time I was in that house. I used to hear someone walking up and down the stairs at night, and I felt someone standing at my bedroom door like something or someone was watching me. It wasn't a nice presence. It felt as though he wanted to hurt me. I only ever saw him once, ever standing up in my cot, so I must have been small. I saw a man with long black hair over his face, so I couldn't see his features, gothic-like clothes, walking past my room in the night. That was the only time I ever saw him, but felt him around all the time. Not too long after that, I would have night terrors. My mom came into my room one night. I was screaming and crying, telling him to go away. I then started shaking violently as though having a seizure. But I was aware of everything that was happening to me. My mom called an ambulance, and while we were waiting for them to arrive, she was shouting out, "Leave my child alone. Take me, but leave her." Once they arrived, it stopped. Just like that. My mom did play the Ouija board game in that house. I don't know whether it was prior to all this, but her friend and a friend were playing this, and my doll, with batteries out, started talking, "Play with me. Won't you be my friend?" Another creepy-ass shit started happening. One night, it was so bad, I got in bed with my mom, and I just slipped into sleep, and the bed started shaking, and the room started spinning. My mom again was holding me tight, telling them to leave me alone, and that they couldn't have me. After that night, we had a priest come and bless the house. He sat with me, and we made wooden crosses and painted them in pretty colors and hung them on my bedroom door and all the other doors in the house. You still felt the presence looking at you from the hallway, but not be able to get in. I was so pleased when we left that house. I've had many more experiences, seeing shadow people and so on. I have a lovely story to tell next time, if you'd like to hear it. I haven't had any paranormal experiences in the past few years. I take a lot of medication for mental health reasons and have taken drugs in the past. I have read somewhere that this blocks your senses. I love reading books about guardian angels and how these impact people's lives and help them in some way or another. And I also love your podcast, and I sit for hours on end listening. Sometimes it frightens me, and I must sleep with the lights on. Thank you again. Sorry if this is long.
I have heard that sometimes medication for anxiety and depression or both can dim your sensitivity to the paranormal, which I think if you're dealing with those things, that might be a good side effect to have.
Sure. I mean, if you're already dealing with the medical end of things, and then you also have the bonus, you get to have sensitivity to the paranormal as well.
Right.
That would, you know, I mean, just the chemical makeup will fuck with you enough. And then add that into the mix, that could surely make it much worse.
Right.
So, yeah. Thank you for sharing that story and that experience with us here on the show. I was just thinking what we were just talking about with the playing radio station. I recall, and I got to find my cassette tapes. I don't know where they are. They're in a box somewhere. I think they might be in the garage somewhere. I recall not that long ago, maybe a couple years ago, going through cassette tapes, and I think I found part of the tape from that day I was just talking about, playing in the front yard with me and my friend Eric at the time, doing the live broadcast.
Wow.
If I could find that, I'd love to play it on the show. It's really just a little clip of insanity fifth grade, sixth grade me. So that would be what, 10, 11, right in that area?
Yeah.
And I gotta go through those tapes sometimes while they still play. I need a cassette player that works, first of all. I don't even know if I even have one that functions.
You've been saying that for 7 years at least.
You're right. I have. Because I keep finding them, and then they kind of peter out very quickly. Gotta find one. Get one of those old Walkmans, you know?
Sony Walkman.
And get the headphones, you know, not like these big studio ones that we have, but more so, you know, the ones that they use before earbuds, mm-hmm. when people used to wear just kind of cheap headphones.
Right.
Find some of those. I never see anybody wear those. They even make those? Can you buy those anymore? Is it like earbuds and that's it?
I think you can probably buy them because some people have trouble with the earbuds.
Because like I know there's like now like the big thing for a lot of like kids is like studio grade headphones, like the Beats and everything. They're huge, which kind of to me look ridiculous out in public, you know, or it's like minute and you can't see it. There's just that happy medium doesn't mm-hmm. seem to be out there in the world of headphones anymore. There you go.
Okay.
All right. I will try and find that tape, and maybe we'll listen to it sometime in the next 2 or 3 years.
And I will try and hide the box.
Come on! I know of another tape where there's a 3-year-old version of me playing radio.
That would be adorable. That one, I think everybody wants to hear.
It's so brief. It's in between. Remember, we used to record songs off the radio? Uh-huh. And you hit record, and then, like, usually if you already had something on the tape, there'd be, like, 3 seconds of whatever was in between. That's what it is. It's 3 seconds of me playing radio station at 3, soliciting people to call in to win a wreath.
That
Tony,
would be cute.
Wreath seller.
Okay.
My bad speech impediment in all.
Oh, that's cute.
Great fun. Then we can find that. I think that goes into a Michael J. Fox or a Huey Lewis song.
Okay.
So, all right. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. And by the way, check out ghostpodcast.com. Become an EPP and help keep us on the air.